Welcome to War Room, the official podcast of the U.S. Army War College online journal, graciously supported by the Army War College Foundation. Please join the conversation at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. We hope you enjoy the program.
Hello, and welcome to the War Room podcast. I'm Jacqueline Witt, professor of strategy at the U.S. Army War College and the War Room podcast editor. I'm happy today to bring you a podcast that continues the conversation about the U.S. relationship with Europe, a region that remains critical to many aspects of U.S. foreign policy and strategy, even as competitors to the United States in the international environment are tending to come from other regions of the globe. In this competitive international environment, then, the transatlantic partnership between the U.S. and Europe is sometimes under strain and often up for discussion and renegotiation. Here to explore this dynamic in more depth are Colonel Daryl Driver, who is the Director of European Studies at the U.S. Army War College, and Mr. Peter Sparting, who is a Transatlantic Fellow at the Washington Office of the George Marshall Fund. So we'll turn now to their discussion.
Hi, I'm Daryl Driver. I'm the Director of European Studies Program here at the U.S. Army War College, and I'm joined today by Mr. Peter Sparting, a Transatlantic Fellow at the Washington Office of the George Marshall Fund. Thanks for joining us today, Peter, and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I wonder if I could start as sort of a broad question to ask you to sort of tell us a little bit more about your specific background and area of expertise and what you've been doing for the German Marshall Fund.
Sure. So the German Marshall Fund, for those of you who don't know it, is actually, despite the name, an American institution. Its mission is to strengthen transatlantic relations, so the cooperation between the U.S., North America, and Europe, not only Germany. And we do this through a number of ways. I personally work in kind of our think tank arm, focusing mostly on economic policy issues, and since I'm German, also on the broader German-American relationship.
Well, great. Well, we've actually got you at a perfect time then, given all that's sort of been going on in the news in recent memory and the, turbulence of sorts in transatlantic and Euro-Atlantic relations. It's certainly been true in recent months, but even under the previous administration with the talk of the pivot and the rebalance to Asia, there was some concern in Europe that perhaps Europe was being eclipsed in terms of its importance to U.S. foreign policy by Asia and its emergence on the global stage. I wonder if you could sort of give us your best case for why Europe really is a sort of, should be at least, a central pillar in U.S. foreign policy given its importance to U.S. interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, it's a kind of a story of Europe being in the news for the wrong reasons lately. So one of the issues, or one of the reasons I think the U.S. or many in the U.S. felt comfortable pivoting away from Europe, was that the European problem after the Cold War seemed somewhat solved. There were still some issues, of course, but that Europe would take care of itself. And unfortunately, Europe has, in the last 10 years, had a number of crises that once again put it on the radar for many U.S. policymakers. So we've had the euro crisis, an economic crisis that's now been going on for 8-9 years. We've had the situation in Ukraine over the last few years. We had the refugee crisis over the last 3-4 years. And now with Brexit, we have a whole new question of the future of the European Union as an institution. So I think this is not a positive case in that sense, that it's not a Sunday speech why the U.S. should care, but actually I think it is in the interest of the U.S. to stay involved in all of these issues because they do impact broader U.S. policy in the region.
And a very important transatlantic, I should say, economic relationship as well. We know that the transatlantic economy constitutes about a third or so of global GDP, about $5.5 trillion in total commercial sales. It's the wealthiest market in the world. So there's certainly a lot of compelling reasons why, you know, we would look to Europe in terms of being a central pillar of U.S. foreign policy.
Absolutely.
But that sort of begs the question then, and maybe Anna Sauerbrey, you know, sort of put it best in a recent New York Times op-ed, where she asked the question, is, in Europe at least, transatlanticism dead? Does, you know, as Angela Merkel indicated after President Trump's trip last year, that Europe need to sort of become more self-reliant and not look to others as much as in the past? Is transatlanticism dead?
Well, by my, you know, the virtues of my job, I have to say no, but it's certainly true. I think we have to unpack this a little bit. So there's two things to this. I think one is that some you could say, criticism from the U.S. side towards the Europeans has been actually quite apparent for at least a decade, if not longer. This, for example, revolves around the Europeans, and especially some European countries like my home country of Germany, spending a bit more on defense and taking care of their own security needs a bit more. This is not a new issue that the Trump administration brought up. This has been mentioned by administrations, by the Obama administration, by the Bush administration. So it's not that the issue is new. The same is, by the way, true in the economic realm for the question of the surplus, the German trade surplus. That's been a thorny issue much longer. The new phenomenon under this current administration, for one, it is very unpopular in Europe since the election. That's one factor. And the way the argument is now phrased is, from the U.S. side, is a bit harsher and has a bit more of an accusatory tone. So I think actually for those in Europe that, or in Germany, for example, that would like to sidestep these requests from the U.S., they can now use the unpopularity of the current administration as an excuse almost to say, well, we're not going to spend more on defense just because this U.S. president is telling us to, thereby ignoring the fact that this has long been a U.S. request and quite a compelling one, I think. So that's currently the two sides to this story. So I think there's certainly a downturn right now in transatlantic relations, but are they dead yet? I don't think that's the case yet. We don't know.
In fact, we have the group of German scholars in particular who had the transatlantic manifesto that was published just a few months ago, and that was responded to by the current foreign minister, who's sort of taken an opposite view in terms of Germany's relationship vis-a-vis the transatlantic community. How do you see that debate unfolding, at least in the near term? And will we recover from this moment?
I should point out that two of my bosses were part of the Transatlantic Manifesto that you can also find in English, and it was published in the New York Times, as you mentioned. So this is exactly the debate that's now been started in Germany. What is the future of the transatlantic relations from a German point of view? You have to understand, I think, that for Germany, from a foreign policy point of view, basically there are two big pillars that were seen as a given. One is European integration and the European Union, and the other was the transatlantic relationship, including security component, of course. So I think one of the two pillars, well, the European Union has been in crisis, as I mentioned, but it's still overall, everybody's committed to this. But the second one, the transatlantic relationship, has now been the topic of debate in Germany. How should one respond to a U.S. that might be, as we talked about earlier, pivoting away or might not see Europe as useful anymore? So there's a number of camps. I would say one is to say that the transatlantic relationship, no matter what, will remain essential to Germany, and we need to somehow make do and hope that while things will not snap back to the way they were once in the Cold War, so that we can find a new good equilibrium. And then others say this is actually a time where Germany and actually Europe should become more self-reliant, and this is a signal that we should maybe not rely as much on the U.S. Of course, then the follow-up question that I think one would have is, so what does that mean? Is Europe going to be willing to actually step up and also including spending and so on? So that would be the decisive question, if that's actually the case.
Right. And we've been through moments, maybe not to this degree, as some would maybe argue, but we've certainly been through moments like this in the past where there's this kind of back and forth schizophrenia between, the U.S. asking Europe to step up and do more, but the U.S. sort of coming back and not really wanting to relinquish its leadership role in the transatlantic community. So
sure.
We shall see. But one of the interesting aspects of the current environment is it's happening simultaneous to the U.K.'s exit from the European Union. How do you see that piece of it playing out in terms of this broader discussion?
Yeah, the timing right now is truly unfortunate with this accumulation of different crises and different forces. So, of course, the U.K. in the transatlantic relationship has what itself calls a special relationship with the U.S., so it's always been a quite important gateway for the transatlantic relationship, for U.S. Influence in Europe. So with the U.K. exiting the EU, there's certainly some some questions as to who can play that role. We've seen in Europe, I mean, we've seen over the last few years, for example, in the Ukraine crisis already, that the U.S. has, or U.S. policymakers have focused a lot of attention on Berlin and especially Chancellor Merkel in those realms. But there's not that historical connection there that there is with the U.K. Ultimately, I think much will depend on what the final new relationship between the UK and the EU will look like. So, for example, what is the actual economic setup? Because that will then determine how much of previous transatlantic economic commerce can still go through the UK and still have its way into the EU and so on. So we'll have to see how that shakes out. In the meantime, I think one of the problems is that given that there are so many crises, the attention span of policymakers is a bit shorter because they're just overburdened with so many situations. So I think in Europe, you know, many people are focused on Brexit, but it's not, except for in the UK, it's not the top priority, top discussion item in many countries.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that begs the question. We had a parliamentarian vote yesterday in the UK. What do you think the prospect, if you had a crystal ball, are they going to exit from the Brexit? Are we going to get another referendum or a way to undo this? Or?
You know, if I should have learned one thing over the last few years is that predictions, I should stay away from predictions, or we should all be careful about them because there's just so many twists and turns. I don't have any indication right now to think that the UK will exit from the exit, so to speak. So I think it's the best assumption is to assume that Brexit will go forward. I mean, the decision was close when it was made in the referendum, but even if there was a second referendum or so, there's no indication that the decision wouldn't be as close, even if it goes the other way. I don't see how that's a sustainable way out of this. The one caveat may be that the political situation in the UK itself is a bit volatile. The majority of the current government in parliament is very slim. They're relying on a smaller party in a coalition. So we could maybe see a shakeup there, new elections, then in the whole ball game gets mixed up again. So I'm not saying there's no chance that things might change, but right now I would operate under the assumption that this will go through.
Right. Yeah. And so you mentioned previously about sort of the nature of the evolving economic relationship, and we know that the UK, in addition to obviously being concerned about that, has looked elsewhere in the world, potentially to Asia, maybe being a part of TPP, which the U.S. walked away from last year. And we know that China certainly has growing economic influence in Europe. Would you characterize Europe then as in the midst of a similar rebalance or pivot, especially with respect to the economic relationship?
Well, that's a good question. I think a lot of that depends on what the U.S. Posture in trade policy is going to be going forward. Yes, the Europeans have certainly taken active steps now with negotiations with Japan on a trade agreement. Vietnam we have already concluded one with Vietnam. I think there are certainly efforts, to step up the trade relationships in Asia. But from the European point of view, it's not that the Europeans are moving away from the transatlantic relationship. The current shakeup comes clearly from the American side. So there's a bit of a waiting game going on. I'm getting a lot of requests. Precisely, right. can you forecast what's going to happen? Of course, you can't really. I mean, I think we're in for a bit of a shakeup this year, maybe in U.S. trade policy. But what the extent of that will be, if there will be a conflict in trade policy between Europe and the U.S., I mean, we don't know that yet. So.
Well, I mean, I said we'd be relatively brief today, and we are. But I have one final question. You're actually going to speak to our European Studies program later today on all these issues, Brexit, trade, and the growing influence potentially of China or Asia in European markets. What's the sort of one big message you'd like to leave those future security leaders with when we have this discussion today?
Yeah, I don't hope I would leave them with the negative message that I said earlier, that Europe is in the news for the wrong reasons. But the case, I think we need to make a new case for the transatlantic relationship in the end. I haven't figured out exactly what that would be, but the old kind of natural case that was there during the Cold War, that is kind of going away. But we can take important lessons from this. I think the U.S., whether it wants to or not, is a European power, so to speak. It has played a huge role over the last century, twice having to actually go to Europe with its military to basically save the continent from catastrophe. And then following World War II, staying involved in the European arena has actually made it possible for the Europeans to integrate. I think it's sometimes in Europe underestimated the importance that the U.S. security guarantee played in basically assuring everybody else in Europe, especially France, of the you know, that there is no more threat from Germany and other countries. So the U.S. involvement in Europe was the, in my view, the fundamental you know, necessity for European integration. I would argue to this group of American leaders that that is in the U.S. interest to have a stable and peaceful Europe even going forward.
Thank you very much. And I certainly look forward to our discussion later today. And thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
And that concludes our program. Thank you for listening. The views expressed in this podcast reflect those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views, policies, or positions of the U.S. Army or the Department of Defense. Let us know what you think. Provide us your feedback, comments, or suggestions through our webpage at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. And have a great day.